Constance had been awake all night. Her skin glistened with sweat. It was almost over. "Breathe, my love." Her husband, Hugo, dabbed her forehead with a damp cloth. Through the haze of her pain, she saw his hands shaking. Her heart was set on making it through the night. When she heard her child's first cries, Constance let out a massive sigh of relief. Hugo laughed with joy, swept up in the moment. "It's a girl!" Dawn was breaking. By the early morning light, she could see her husband cradling the baby by the foot of their bed. "Let me hold her." Constance reached out for her daughter, tears welling in her eyes. The door of their small cottage flew open, blinding them both with early morning light. In the doorway stood a woman that Constance had never seen before. She was bent and withered, every feature on her drooping and misshapen like a melting candle. The woman barely acknowledged Constance, turning instead to Hugo with a curious smile on her lips. Hugo stood as still as a statue, staring at the wrinkled woman. The woman reached out both her hands toward their child. The crone finally spoke, with a voice as aged and strong as an oak tree. "It is time for you to honor our agreement." I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today, we're going to explore the story of Rapunzel, a tale of love and loss, all centered around a tower in the middle of the woods and a girl with long golden hair. Today's episode adapts the earliest recorded version of this story, one where you may not recognize the main character by name. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. The original tale of Rapunzel features kidnapping, abusive parenting, mutilation, and an unplanned pregnancy. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find episodes on your favorite podcast directory. While you're there, feel free to leave a 5-star review. Tales releases a new episode every other Saturday, so if you enjoy it, please subscribe. Rapunzel is one of the most iconic fairy tales around the world. The lone tower with a maiden perched in its highest room is one of the quintessential images of fairy tale lore. The name Rapunzel first appears in a version of the tale written by Friedrich Schultz in 1790, but most of the story and characters are much older than that. Schultz based his story off of the French tale Percinet, first recorded by Charlotte Rose de Caumont de la Force in 1634. This is the story we'll be telling you today. The Schultz version was adapted for posterity by the Brothers Grimm, who included it in their collection of fairy tales in 1812. They made numerous changes, including downplaying the sexual themes and changing the jealous fairy into a witch. Since then, it has been adapted countless times, becoming one of the most retold fairy tales in Western literature. Since Percinet, three elements have remained the same in every version of this story: the maiden's long hair, her isolated upbringing, and the prince who rescues her from the lonely tower. Perhaps a reason this story continues to resonate with modern audiences is its assertion that it is possible to find true love even in the loneliest places. But the path to Percinet's happily ever after was not a pleasant one in the original tale. We'll begin before the titular woman was even born, back when her father was forced to make a terrible decision. Hugo was not a perfect man, but he was a doting husband. When his wife began to show signs of pregnancy, he did not hesitate to take all the housework upon himself. "Do not worry, my love. I'll take care of everything." He grew nervous, as new fathers often do, that he would not be a proper role model for the child. Constance sensed this and would tell him, "I am nervous too, husband, but that is a good thing. Only bad parents do not doubt themselves. They both wanted nothing more than a child they could call their own. They did not care whether it was a boy or a girl. Perhaps they would be blessed with twins. The couple would often stay up late, coming up with names for their potential child. Gerard, or Maximilian, if it was a boy. Catherine, or Perrine, if it was a girl. One afternoon, Hugo returned to find Constance staring out their back window. "What is it that fascinates you, my love?" he asked. She licked her lips hungrily and told him she craved a salad. Hugo protested. "We cannot afford another visit to the market this month." She shook her head and pointed out the back window, where she had been staring. "Everything we need is in those fields." She was staring at their neighbor's garden, where a fresh bed of rampion rustled invitingly in the evening wind. Their purple flowers swayed back and forth like a beacon to the tender leaves below. But Hugo wasn't paying attention to the rampion. His thoughts flew beyond them to the owner of that particular garden. The spinster who lived there, Moran, was an enigma to the village. All sorts of rumors persisted that she practiced black magic inside her cottage and never came out to greet anyone. "How could I barter with a woman who never comes out?" Hugo asked. Constance persisted, pointing out that Moran often left her gate open and with such a lush garden would not miss a small handful of vegetables. Her confidence made Hugo uneasy. Stealing from such a woman would not only be wrong, but it could be dangerous. Sensing her husband's reticence, Constance begged, "Please, husband, you do not know how much I yearn to eat a bed of greens." As she pressed him, her forehead started to bead with sweat. Hugo took her away from the window and had her lie down. Now, my dear," he told her, "this will pass." But it did not pass. Over the next couple of days, Constance grew sickly. A fever struck her, and she could not rest. Although Hugo fed her as many breads and meats as they could spare, she was never satisfied. As the sun fell one dark afternoon, Constance said to Hugo, "Help me, husband. I fear that if I do not satisfy my craving, I will not be able to bear this child." This was the impetus Hugo needed to become a thief. He always considered himself an honest man, but he hated seeing his wife suffer. He emptied out a small sack and made his way to the neighbor's yard. As Constance had predicted, Hugo found the gate open and unattended. Thanking the heavens for his good fortune, he made straight for the bed of rampion. He seized as many leaves as he could and stuffed them into his sack. When he returned, his wife was overjoyed. She leapt from her bed and made a salad out of the stolen greens, as if they had already revived her. She greedily devoured the salad, not even asking her husband if he wanted any. Within 15 minutes, every single leaf Hugo had stolen was gone. But Constance was not satisfied. Consuming the delicious salad caused her craving to multiply tenfold. She implored her husband to go back to their neighbor's yard the following night. Unable to talk his wife out of it, Hugo did as he was told and crept into the garden by night. Now with two large bags, he was determined to gather enough greens for a dozen salads. Maybe that would satisfy Constance's bizarre craving. Hugo turned at the noise. The back door of Moran's cottage was swinging open on its hinges. A cold breeze rustled the leaves all around him, and he was struck with a terrible fear.
"Who goes there, stalking through my garden?"
Hugo could not tell where the voice came from. It seemed to emanate from every shadow. He did not respond, but stood stock still, trembling head to toe. The rustling continued behind him, and a figure emerged from the foliage. It was Moran herself, a tall woman with an otherworldly presence about her. Her mouth curled into an unnatural snarl at the intruder. Hugo dropped both of his bags and fell to his knees, awaiting judgment. Hugo could feel magic emanate from the woman as she stood over him. Though she looked human, there was no mistaking it. This was no ordinary neighbor. This was a fairy. Horrible thoughts filled his head about what the crone might do to him. Turn him into a statue? Take his teeth from his head and sow them in the earth like seeds? What price does a fairy demand from a trespasser?
Tell me what you are doing in my garden, and do not lie to me, or I will bury you alive and grow mushrooms from your rotting flesh.
Hugo frantically explained his desperation, imploring that the fairy let him go, hoping against hope that he would find a merciful bone somewhere within the cruel creature.
Your wife wants my greens?
The fairy's smile was crooked, full of sharp teeth. Hugo thought he detected a fiendish glint in her eye, but would not dare look at her face long enough to be sure. She does, more than anything in the world.
Then she may have them.
Hugo exhaled in relief and began to gather his bags from the ground.
Thank you, kind Maren. In truth, I do not know what I would do without these. You have saved a pregnant woman much grief.
Maren held up a finger, stopping the man in the middle of his thanks.
I am not giving these to you. I propose a trade.
Hugo shrunk away from the fairy's outstretched finger, brow knit in suspicion.
What would you have me give? We are a poor couple.
I do not ask for much, she crooned. All I want is your child. You will give her to me, and I will care for her as my own.
Hugo's heart sank. He and Constance had tried for years to have a baby, of all things to ask. He looked pleadingly at the woman, eyes brimming with tears. Anything else?
Does this deal seem unfair to you?
The fairy flashed a warning glare down at Hugo.
Or shall I punish you and your unborn daughter for the rampion you have already stolen from me?
In a panic, Hugo promised their child to the old woman. The second the words left his lips, the fairy was gone. Satisfied with his answer, she had vanished back into her cottage. In a daze, Hugo half-heartedly gathered the remaining vegetables and made his way out through the wrought iron gate. His mind was racing. How would he tell his wife that he had bargained their child away for a salad? And that open gate? It was said that fairies often used human infants for their own nefarious purposes. Had the fairy left the gate open to draw him in? Had she cast some sort of spell on Constance to make her desire the greens? By the time Hugo got back home, Constance was in a fit. She needed the greens. Hugo unloaded his bags for her. They were filled with rampion, lettuce, cabbages, and Valerianella locusta, a vegetable more commonly known as Rapunzel. That night, Constance slept more soundly than she had in weeks, sated by her leafy banquet. Hugo stayed up all night, staring at the ceiling, thinking about the devil's bargain he had struck. By the time their child was born, Hugo had almost forgotten about the fairy next door. In the remaining months of her pregnancy, his wife developed no more mad cravings for vegetables, and they returned to peaceful excitement. But when the fairy stood in their door that fateful morning, Hugo handed over his own daughter without hesitation. He couldn't even look at his wife. When he finally went over to comfort her, she slapped his hand away and refused to talk to her hapless husband.
After that moment, their relationship was broken forever. We'll return to our story in just a moment. And now, back to our story. The girl's golden hair shone in the sun. She liked how it did that. Named Percinet by her doting mother, the 11-year-old had every need taken care of. Not a worry in the world. She spent her days frolicking in the fields and singing, the only thing, besides cutting her hair, that mother tried to prevent her from doing.
"Songs are for birds, not for my Percinet," she always said.
But Percinet didn't care. She wasn't singing for attention, after all. She was singing because she enjoyed it. Surely her mother would understand that eventually. And there was plenty to sing about today. She was nearly 12. Tomorrow morning was her birthday, and she could not wait to see what presents her mother had in store for her. Percinet slept soundly that night, visions of birthday surprises unfolding in her mind. Perhaps Maren would finally take her to meet some of the other children in the town. She loved her mother dearly, but knew there had to be other people in the world worth meeting. There was only so much she could hear about fairy potions and gardening. Percinet awoke on the morning of her 12th birthday to a blinding light shining down onto her bed. She blinked and rose to her feet. As her eyes adjusted to the light, she realized this wasn't her room. The walls were polished and lined with ornate furniture, and the ceiling rose above her bed in a high arch. Where? Percinet slowly approached the window and looked out. The treetops stretched out towards the horizon, where they vanished into the sides of nearby mountains. It was a glorious view. And then she looked down and saw the 70-foot drop beneath her. She recoiled from the windowsill and immediately sought a door or stairs to lead her back down to the beautiful outdoors. It was a lovely day for skipping. She had to... That was when Mother Maren appeared to her in a flash of fairy magic.
"Look what I have given you for your birthday, child," Mother Maren announced. "You are a woman now, and a woman needs her own place to live."
Percinet didn't know how to react. She was happy living at ground level. How could this be what is best for her? Is this what every girl gets on the eve of adulthood? A private tower?
"You see, my child," the fairy continued, "the outside world is full of men who would prey on such a young and beautiful woman such as yourself. And here you will be safe from all of them."
Maren showed Percinet her new home. Now that the shock was wearing off, Percinet was starting to realize just how glamorous it was. The furniture was extraordinarily comfortable. The walls had shelves stacked with books, and there was a wardrobe full of lavish dresses, grown-up dresses. Percinet's mother informed her that invisible fairy servants inhabited the tower as well. So whenever she needed a meal or something to entertain herself, Percinet need only ask and it would be brought to her. Everything she could ever want was at her fingertips, but with one condition.
"The most important part, my dear," the fairy warned, "is that you never cut your beautiful golden hair, so I may visit you from the ground below."
That sounded fair. Percinet promised that she would. The fairy gave her a kiss on the forehead and vanished once again, leaving the girl alone in her gilded cage. The fairy was right about one thing. Percinet certainly was never bored. She now had all the time in the world to read, paint, or learn to play new instruments. Whenever she was hungry, sumptuous feasts appeared before her immediately. And now that her mother was no longer hounding her every step, she felt free to sit on the windowsill and sing her heart out. Percinet kept her promise to her mother and never cut her hair. Soon enough, her golden locks reached past her toes and would spill onto the floor when she walked. She took up braiding her hair to keep it under control. Eventually, it got so long that it could reach to the bottom of the tower. That was when her mother started to visit again. It had been a few years, and Percinet was overjoyed to have someone to talk to. At her mother's bidding, she would loop her hair over a hook by the window, then throw it down to the fairy waiting below. Fairies are lighter than humans, but it was still a shock just how heavy Maren was the first time Percinet had to lift her to the window. From then on, Maren visited Percinet every day to make sure her daughter was safe. Prince Isaac had never been much of a hunter. This infuriated his father, who wanted to raise a son strong enough to tackle a boar or shoot a doe through the eye at 100 yards. But Isaac was not that man. He was more content to be lost in his own thoughts. However, hunting was the perfect excuse to get away from his overbearing father and wander the woods on horseback. This morning, he found himself taking a different route, riding far deeper into the woods than he had intended. He was not scared, though. There was something comforting about this part of the woods. The sound brought him to a halt. It was faint, but very clearly a human voice, singing the most enchanting melody he had ever heard. He had to find out what was making that sweet sound. He drove his horse further into the woods, ignoring all landmarks beyond that single haunting voice. The prince was a romantic at heart, so a mysterious singer was far more intriguing to him than whatever wild game his father wanted him to hunt. At last, the trees parted to reveal a clearing. Isaac's jaw dropped open. There was a silver tower in the middle of the woods. Its surface shone like a beacon, reflecting the midday sun's light. It was finer than any of the towers on his father's castle, yet completely out of place amidst the bushes and the fields surrounding it. He dismounted and walked toward it. As he neared the perplexing structure, he realized the voice was coming from a window at the very top of the tower. As far as he could tell, the only window. He immediately set about looking for a door. Avoiding the thorn bushes that encircled the base of the tower, he made his way around its circumference, but there was no door anywhere. He had to get up to that window, but how? What was that? The prince crouched behind the tower, hand flying to the hilt of his sword. Someone else was approaching. Peering through the brambles, he saw an old woman making her way to the tower. There was something not quite normal about this woman. The atmosphere around her felt charged, like the air that precedes a lightning storm. She may have looked human, but Isaac suspected she was something far more dangerous. The woman reached the section of the tower beneath the window and looked up. She called,
"Percinet, let down your hair."
A moment passed, and then the impossible happened. A cascade of golden hair reached down to the strange woman. The prince watched in awe as she took hold of it and was lifted up and out of sight. The prince had no way of knowing how long the old woman would be up there, but he had to meet this mysterious singer. So he vowed to return the following evening and call for the owner of that golden hair. He found his way back to his horse and carefully retraced his steps to the part of the forest that he knew, and from there back home. The next day was a fairly ordinary one for Percinet. She whiled away her morning with her nose lodged in a book. Mother Maren's regular visit came and went. As always, she was delighted with how her little girl was growing. But Percinet was getting restless. She had spent so many days reading about far-off lands and adventures that she longed to get out. Her eyes often wandered to the window hook, and she wondered if her hair was strong enough to lower herself down with. A silly thought, but one she could not quite get rid of.
Percinette, let down your hair!
Percinette sat up. Was her mother back so soon? What could she have forgotten? A cursory glance around the room revealed nothing out of the ordinary, but Percinette did not want to take any chances. If her mother was back so soon, it must be important. She hurried to the window, looped her hair around the hook, and let her long locks fall to the ground below. The mighty tug on her hair surprised her. Mother Moran was much lighter than this. Perplexed, Percinette pulled as usual, bringing her mother and whatever her mother was carrying through the open window. But the individual who stepped through was not Moran. It was a man. Percinette had never seen a man before, but she had read about them in books. The man she saw before her was an almost perfect recreation of one of those figures, tall, handsome, and clad in shimmering silks. Her mother's warnings rang in her head a moment later. He was a man, and men are dangerous. Before she could scream, the prince held out a hand.
Do not be afraid. I would never hurt you.
Percinette was not convinced.
Who are you?
He introduced himself and told her how her singing had led him to her tower. He said she was the most lovely woman he had ever seen in his life. And that was no small feat, since he spent his life around the princesses of many neighboring kingdoms. He then dropped to one knee and asked her to marry him. Percinette was utterly flabbergasted. Is this common? Proposing marriage to a person after knowing them for barely a minute? And yet there was something in the way the prince looked at her. Percinette was no expert at reading people, but she could tell that this man would do anything for her, and anything was just what she needed. This prince was her way out of the tower. Her mother wouldn't have to worry about protecting her with a royal guard around. Maybe her mother didn't even have to know. Percinette agreed to marry him on the condition that he get her out of this tower as soon as possible. She was delighted with her own quick thinking.
So, how will we get married?
She asked. In the books she read, weddings were a massive affair, full of guests and celebration. There were just two of them there in the tower. The prince took a step closer to her. Gently, he took her hand. She shivered. His hands were so soft, much softer than Moran's ancient palms. We can have the celebration when I bring you back home with me. In the meantime, we can still have our wedding night. Percinette had no idea what this meant. And then the prince kissed her. In the storybooks she read, love was innocent and pure. But those stories always ended right at the wedding. They didn't explain to her what a real wedding night would be like. The prince lay beside her afterward, breathing heavily. It was all he could do to not get tangled up in her hair. Percinette rolled over to face her new husband. Though she enjoyed the prince's company immensely, her mind was still fixated on finally being free from the tower she had spent so much of her life sealed in. Percinette suggested she could cut her hair, tie it off, and use it as a rope to climb down. The prince shook his head vehemently.
I would never want you to cut your beautiful hair.
She blushed at the remark. Her mother complimented her all the time, but somehow it felt different coming out of the prince's mouth. Isaac pitched an alternative plan. He would visit her nightly, and every visit he'd bring with him a scrap of silk or fabric from the castle, and little by little she could weave a ladder for herself. That way she could leave the tower without a trace, not even a hair left behind.
All they had to do was make sure Maren never found out about the prince's nightly visits. The more Isaac visited, the more bored Percinet grew with Maren's visits. It was as if having a brand new companion made her mother's conversation stale by contrast. Maren was no longer her only line to the outside world. She had become just an obligation. Then something odd started happening, something she did not want to bring up to the prince.
"Mother?" Percinet queried. "Why are all my dresses getting tighter around the waist?"
Although she was well-fed by the fairy servants that lived in the tower, Percinet didn't believe she was gaining weight. Mother Maren froze. She walked towards Percinet, eyes fixed on the young woman's belly. She placed a hand on Percinet's rounding stomach and held it there for several indeterminable moments. When she looked up at her daughter, her eyes were both filled with tears and blazing with fury.
"How could you betray me like this? You have been seeing a man up in this tower."
Percinet was confused. How had this innocent question provoked such a response?
"Of course not, Mother. I have heeded your wisdom about the dangers of the outside world."
Maren loomed over Percinet like a storm cloud.
"You are with child. What man found his way here?"
Percinet stammered, fighting the rising panic. But in that moment, fighting furiously to maintain her composure, her eyes betrayed her. They flicked ever so slightly to her wardrobe. Maren saw this and ripped open the cabinet so hard the wood splintered in her hands. She tore through Percinet's dresses violently until she discovered the unfinished silk ladder. On seeing the elegant fabric, the fairy grew angrier still.
"Has some duke or lord violated you?"
Percinet tried once again to calm her mother's fury.
"Is it not marvelous, Mother, that the first man I ever meet be a prince?"
Percinet implored, attempting to convey her newfound happiness to her unheeding mother.
"And that he should fall in love with me like this. Now you will not have to spend so much energy protecting me."
Maren grabbed Percinet by the top of her head. From the folds of her cloak, she produced a pair of scissors. Without a word, the fairy hacked away at Percinet's golden locks. Percinet was powerless to move. By the time her mother finished, Percinet was in tears. The fairy had completely shorn the hair from Percinet's head, leaving only a few inches behind.
"You will never see this prince again,"
Maren declared.
"You will go to the woods and bear his child in the wilderness like an animal."
Percinet opened her mouth to protest, but before the words even left her mouth, the tower, the fairy, and her hair were gone. She no longer recognized her surroundings. Wherever her mother had sent her, she was far, far away from her old home. She was in some strange part of the woods, pregnant and alone. We'll return to our story in just a moment from the Parcast Network. Now the story continues. Prince Isaac was on top of the world. Every day with Percinet was a blessing, and even his father's constant badgering would not dampen his mood. He was a little early today, but that was all right. As long as he didn't run into his fairy mother-in-law, everything would be perfect. He rode up to Percinet's tower and called up his customary greeting.
"Percinet, let down your hair."
As expected, the hair fell down and he took hold of it. He could not wait to tell his wife the news of the day and then lose himself in her embrace. He truly was the luckiest man in the world. Or at least he thought so, until he reached the window. Standing in his beloved's room was Maren, a savage grin on her lips. His beloved's hair was clutched in between her claw-like fingernails. He stepped into the room and drew his sword.
What have you done with Percinet, fairy?
You came for your darling,
the fairy cried, cruelly mocking the lovesick man.
But the sweet bird no longer sings in this nest. You will see her no more.
The fairy's words were well chosen, and they hit Prince Isaac like a volley of arrows. Now he believed, as Marin intended, that his wife was dead. Gripping the hilt of his rapier, his hands began to tremble. Isaac raised his sword, heart fixed on avenging his love, and charged the fairy. But Marin was quick. She reached forward and grabbed him by the throat. Her grip was tighter than iron. Before he could strike her once, she flung him head first out of the window. Prince Isaac opened his eyes to agony. The fall had not killed him, but he had fallen face first into the briar thorns that surrounded the tower. He blinked to clear the blood out of his eyes, only to be met with more spikes of pain. The thorns had pierced his eyes, leaving them raw and blind. Warm rivulets of blood streaked his cheeks as he rose to a standing position. Unable to see the clear path out, Isaac felt his way out of the briars, thorns cutting his hands to ribbons. He was in agony, but he did not care. No physical pain could match the wounds in his heart. The prince stumbled off into the woods, lamenting his loss. Trees and brush cut at his face until the once handsome man resembled a shambling shell of his former self. He survived on roots and berries like an animal and never heard a single search party from his kingdom. He realized sadly that even if they did see him, they would not recognize him as their former prince. In the wilderness, Percinet gave birth to twins. No longer able to rely on invisible fairy cooks, she used what Marin had taught her about plants to survive on vegetables and herbs. With two children to feed, it was all she could do to keep her own strength up. She sang to her children constantly, not the happy and hopeful sound that drew the prince to her, but a mournful dirge that reflected the deep despair in her own soul. Percinet found a rough home for them in an abandoned shack, and it was all she could do to keep her children warm and fed over the years. As time passed, a single question continually gnawed at her mind. How could she raise her children properly when her own mother had set such a horrid example? One day, Percinet saw a blind man approaching their home, shoulders draped in a ragged cloak. He must have heard her singing and come to listen. He was a dreadful sight, hair and face caked in dried blood and muck. Percinet grew quiet when he got closer. There was something familiar about him underneath the filth. The man opened his mouth and said in a voice hoarse from disuse, "Percinet, let down your hair." She gasped, unbelieving. This was her husband, who had been searching for her all these years. She ran up and embraced him, weeping at their sudden change of fortune. Her tears ran down her face onto his and into his unseeing eyes. When they touched his eyeballs, the tears washed away the scars, restoring his sight. The first thing he saw with his new eyes were the children Percinet had been raising on her own all these years. But a jealous fairy is a hard thing to escape. Marin had kept an eye on her daughter all this time and was furious to see her and the prince reunited. She drew deep into herself, determined to use every spell at her disposal to destroy their last chance at happiness. Percinet set out to prepare a meal for her newly returned husband, but was met with a horrible shock. When she checked the pantry, she found her rampion and cabbages had turned to stone. Without food, she ran to the well to see if she could at least bring her parched husband a drink. Percinet recoiled in terror. The well was full of venomous snakes, fangs bared at her. She fled back to their home as the snakes poured up from the well and slithered after her. As she fled, she stopped for just one moment to take one look at the sky. The songbirds that had innocently chirped above them a minute ago were now ferocious dragons, breathing fire onto the nearby foliage. Panicking, Percinet continued her flight, slamming the door behind her. Her husband and two children stood by the window, staring out at the approaching inferno. Percinet and Isaac's eyes met. They knew there was no escaping from the fairy this time. They huddled together with their children as the shack grew unbearably hot. Percinet squeezed her eyes shut, holding her family tight. Whether snake bites or dragon fire, it would have to go through her first. In that moment, she was prepared. It didn't matter, as long as they died together. Suddenly, all sounds of chaos stopped. The birds were chirping again, and the fire no longer licked at their brittle wooden home. As the ragged family emerged, they saw a single figure standing where the hellscape had been a mere moment ago. It was Maren, tears glistening in her eyes. In all her life, Percinet had never seen her mother cry before. Seeing the desperate family bonded together in the face of certain death had extinguished Maren's fury. She finally gave Percinet her blessing. A moment later, they appeared in the palace in front of Isaac's father, who welcomed the new family with open arms. Percinet, Isaac, and their two children lived out the rest of their lives in comfort, and Percinet never let her hair grow out below her shoulders. As for Maren, she was never heard from again. While most know Rapunzel as a tale of love triumphing over all, the original story of Percinet is more of a cautionary tale, telling us how not to treat our children. While Percinet's original parents bartered her away, her adopted mother is arguably worse, treating her daughter more like a prisoner than her daughter. In 1986, composer Stephen Sondheim and writer James Lapine used the story of Rapunzel as a jumping-off point for their acclaimed fairy tale musical, Into the Woods. One of the most poignant lyrics in that show is, "Be careful the things you say, children will listen." Perhaps the true lesson of Rapunzel is to be wary of what faults you pass on to your offspring, for everything bad that happens to her is a direct result of her sheltered childhood. But that's not the whole lesson. In the original story, it's not the love between Percinet and her prince that finally melts the fairy's heart, but rather their shared love as a family. In the end, the only way Percinet could escape her history with bad parenting was to break the cycle and be a good mother to her children. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more Tales, you can find us and subscribe on your favorite podcast directory or at parcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, we would really appreciate a 5-star rating. We'll see you next time. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Robert Teamstra. I'm Vanessa Richardson.